Welcome to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com, the show dedicated to green initiatives. Now, here's your host, Percy Dyer.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. Again, my name is Percival, and this is my place. And today we have some very exciting guests, and I'm very, very pleased to have for the beginning of the show, the first half of the show, some friends of mine from San Diego, California. Charles, Linda, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for letting us in here.
Hi, Percy.
Hey, Linda, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I'm glad you guys came on. I'm very happy to hear from you. Well, you know, it's my pleasure. And, you know, Charles and Linda has a very interesting organization that they founded, and I'm going to let them talk about it. But, you know, Charles, Linda, I want to say thank you for coming on to the show. It's a pleasure to have you. And how are things out in San Diego?
Well, you know, San Diego is as awesome as it gets. You know, I wouldn't live anywhere else. Just looking around the country on television, you know, it's a mess everywhere, and it doesn't seem like it's getting much better. But otherwise, we're doing fine, and I'd like to give you a little background why I founded the Passion for Kids nonprofit 501c3.
That is cool. That's
a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, they have an organization called Passion for Kids, and again, I'm going to let them explain it, but again, we find that there's nothing greener to have than our children. So that's why I had these guests come on today to give you a background information on what they do and their charity organization. So, okay, guys, take it away.
All right, thank you, and interrupt anytime you feel like it, okay? I'm a 72-year young dude. I was born and raised in Amsterdam, Holland during World War II. Just because my father's side was Jewish, I saw at the age of two my whole family being snatched away in front of my own eyes by the Nazis. They came up the stairs and banging in our doors with their high-pitched voices, and they took everybody, my father, my grandfather, my grandmother, my uncle, everybody but my mother and I. And the reason I'm alive today is because my mother was Catholic. And so everybody else went. And then we stood in front of the window watching my mother screaming. And we saw, you know, the Nazis dragging people out of all the homes and just pouring them into truck like cattle. Being deported to concentration camps. So anyway, I spent 8 years in a state-run orphanage because my mother couldn't handle me. There was the war, no food, no money, no nothing. So she had to try to fight for her own existence. So she put me in a state-run orphanage, and I spent 8 years there. It was a state-run orphanage, so it was not just like a private organization. And I endured total abuse of every kind you can imagine that a child can be abused for 8 years. We even ate flower bulbs just to survive, you know, not starve to death. So it was a pretty horrendous time. And then I came to America, otherwise the story might go on too long. I came to America at the age of 23 in 1964. And, I settled down after a little while in El Paso, Texas, and where I met some missionaries, and we went together across the border into Juarez, Mexico, to work the garbage dumps where all the little kids run around, you know, searching for food. Home, they live in cardboard boxes, an unbelievable scene, and that reflected me to my own upbringing. And at that moment, God spoke to me right then and there. You need to do something and work with children. And so in 1986, I founded Passion for Kids, which stands for, the KIDS stands for K period, I period, D period, S period, Kids in Desperate Situations.
Okay.
And so that was the year of the foundation was formed. And then in between my jobs that I had to work, you know, to make things happen, I worked a little here and there on the charity, but it didn't really pick up that much steam. until I met my beautiful lady, Linda, in 2001. And we got married in 2005. And together, we have picked up steam and really work on an almost daily basis, hands-on, with a couple of dozen children in need, both homeless or handicapped or neglected or abused, like I was in the past. So,
oh my goodness, that is quite a story. I didn't realize that you had a WW2 background. That's I'm very sorry that that happened to you. You know, those atrocities back then are unfathomable now. We can't even as human beings, we can't even picture what even though it's well documented, but you know what Hitler and those Nazis were doing at those at that time to people. It's a shame.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine that some people say it never happened, you know?
yeah, I know. And we won't even get into that discussion. That's ridiculous. That's a whole nother show.
Yeah. I met my beautiful lady who herself has an amazing background. You know, she's very short. She worked in the White House for President Ford. His assistant. At age 8, she dreamed of working in the White House, and her parents said, yeah, sure, you and millions of other little girls. But she did it. At 19 years old, she worked at the White House for President Ford. And then when Ford retired, she took her home to become the director of press and scheduling for him and Mrs. Ford. And then she ran the Billy Graham crusade to press. She ran that for 25 years. And then another couple of years, he worked for Dr. Robert Schuller of the Crystal Cathedral. So the reason I mention that is because of her PR and media background. We get on TV once in a while, and that helps us a lot, you know, for raising funds, because that's the very difficult part these days when you are a small charity. You know, it's the raising funds. It's a nightmare sometimes. But I'll let you say a couple of words here with Linda herself. So.
Okay. Linda, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And we're so grateful that you give us this opportunity to talk about our charity, because we feel our mission is to work with children in the United States. There are so many children in our own neighborhoods and backyard that we have found have tremendous needs. And we were not even aware of it ourselves until we started this. And there's not a week that goes by that we don't get calls from children and families around the United States that are in really desperate situations that are not of their making. And so it's a real epidemic here.
I understand. You know, Linda, just really quick, before I forget, tell people how they can reach your organization. It's on my website, but I'd like for people to be able to reach you directly.
Yeah, we have our website, which is passion4kids.org, or they can email us. You can email me directly at linda@passion4kids.org, or you can call us 760-518-2780. And we'd be happy to tell you more about our work and about the precious children we work with.
That's fantastic. So give us some details exactly what you do when somebody gives you a call. What exactly is going on in some of the process that you guys do with people?
Well, first of all, of course, we do our due diligence to make sure that it's a, you know, legitimate situation. Mm-hmm. And then we, if they have parents that are with them, sometimes they're in foster care. You know, there's all different types of situations, but we assess with the family what is their urgent need, and it varies from child to child. Some all of a sudden developed a life-threatening illness, and one of the parents can only work in the other stays at the bedside of the child or has to take care of them, become the full-time caregiver. So there are basic things in those families that they need, which are really basic as in food, water, clothes. We help pay their electric bills. Sometimes we have to pay a car payment for them so that they can get back and forth to the hospital. We sometimes get them a handicapped van if their child then needs that. We make repairs on their homes. We in fact, for one child that was a year and a half years old, and he was hit by a teen drunk driver while being wheeled in his stroller on the sidewalk by his grandpa to the park on a Monday morning. And paralyzed for life. And his parents were 21 years old, just starting their lives. And we worked with them, and we raised $100,000 and put a down payment on a small home for them, and then worked with 64 San Diego-based businesses to do an extreme home makeover for them so that it would give them stability so that they could focus on their child's recovery instead of being panicked as to, you know, how they were going to survive and where they were going to live.
Wow. Okay, so your organization, anyone can reach you in any part of the country?
Yes, we work with children all over the United States.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's great. Wow. And what a story. Ooh, my goodness. So are you, have you done some television how has the message gone out there?
Yes, we have done some television. Actually, in San Diego, the media has been extremely kind to us because of this story with the baby Isaiah, as we call him, who was hit by the stroller, in the stroller by the car. And so they helped us keep that story alive for 2 years. And so our charity was featured very, very prominently in newscasts and things. And then MSNBC picked it up nationally, and Univision picked it up nationally. And, in fact, we recently were contacted by the Dr. Phil show because they heard about the story and raising, the funds for the baby and that type of thing. So they've been talking with us about possibly doing a story this season.
Yeah, we are just around the clock busy. As a matter of fact, as we speak, we're dealing with a family that have 19 special needs children in one home. Blind, some blind, some in all deformed in wheelchairs. A terrible situation. One older couple, and we are right now remodeling their bathroom. We're trying to arrange some funds so that we can pay for the materials. And so we are nonstop busy working on projects, but, you know, we can only work on projects when we have funds, and that's always very hard to come by. And one of the ways that we get funds in is that I founded created a liquid vitamin product like nothing else the world has ever seen called Passion for Life, also the number 4. And Regis Philbin takes our product, and many doctors and athletes, it's liquid. And a part of that product goes into our Passion for Kids charity to help with all our expenses.
Okay, so Charles, listen, I was trying to save that for the second half of the show, but you've opened it up.
I'm sorry.
You've beaten me to the punch, and I wanted to talk about that nutrition that you have because it's. Everyone I know is selling that product because they want to help you guys out, and I couldn't wait to talk about that because nutrition, of course, this is a part of this genre over here. But that's it's a fantastic product, and I know that we had a previous guest on the show that was talking about your product. So I wanted to save that for the second half of the show. So let me do a commercial break right now. And let's talk about that on the second half of your segment, okay?
Awesome. Thank you.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
All righty. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Percival's Place. Okay, so Charles, let's talk a little bit about that formula that you have there and why it's cutting edge, because I understand that a lot of athletes are taking this. I have a friend of mine named Susie who uses that on her farm animals as well. So let's talk about this formula that you have.
Basically I created this amazing liquid vitamin and mineral product because of my own needs, because when I came out of the orphanage, totally with no nutrition and no proper upbringing and just a disastrous first 20 years of my life, I came to America and I started taking handfuls of vitamin pills. They didn't really work for me because I found out that the vitamin pills do not absorb. Only about 20% ends up in the body, and 80 cents of every dollar is flushed down the toilet, literally and effectively, which can be verified through the sewage plants where they find them. So I studied nutrition. Yeah, no kidding. And, I mean, they find thousands of pounds of the pills in the sewage system's filters, and believe it or not, but some of them still have the name on it. So no kidding. I studied nutrition for about 20 years to find out what this was all about with vitamins, and I realized that I needed to create a liquid product that had everything in it, of which you only take 1 ounce a day, which tastes great. And I did that. After 20-some years of studying nutrition, we created the product. We called it Passion Number 4 Life, and people can check on the website what an amazing product this is, which I will give you in a minute. But the purpose of me telling you this is that a part of the profit of every bottle that people take goes to the children, to the Passion for Kids charity. So when people take this product, they do something fantastic for their own body and mind while taking care of a child in need. So that was the real purpose of it.
Right. You can't beat that. I mean, that is fantastic. And I've gotten nothing but rave reviews because there are famous athletes and everybody that I know who takes that formula of yours, they don't come off of it. They stick with it, which is fantastic. Yeah. And I'm so happy to hear that it tastes good because that's one of the major killers for people who don't want to stay healthy. It doesn't taste good and X, Y, and Z. You know, it's just an excuse. Yeah. And if something tastes good and it's healthy for them, they'll stay with it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it changes people's lives, Percy, because, you know, we don't pay for any endorsements. We have Regis Philbin on our product, giving us 2 endorsements on our website. And, you know, he can get $1 million from any company saying what he's saying, but he does it because the product works and he wants people to know it. We have major doctors and athletes and celebrities and NFL and NASCAR. We have a lot of these people on our product because the product actually really, really works and tastes great. And so a lot of children start their young lives on this product, Passion for Life. And people can see all the information on our website. And if I may give it, it's passion4lifevitamins.com. And there is a lot of scientific information, doctor's endorsements, and there's everything there that you need to find to change your life.
That's fantastic. And I'm going to invite you guys when I finish the pilot program for my show. I'm going to invite you guys to come on to the show on Dish Network on NBC later on down the line before the winter hits. How about that?
That's awesome.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome. It's not a problem. It's definitely my pleasure because we want to get this kind of a message out. So so you're dealing with nutrition with these children as well.
Yes, we donate the nutrition, the Passion for Life, to our Passion for Kids kits. As a matter of fact, you know, as you know and your listeners know, childhood obesity is a terrible issue in this country. There are young people in their 20s now having heart attacks and diabetes, which is totally unbelievable, but it is totally true, and that should never happen. I mean, kids, when they go to school, they already have 5-6 tablespoons of sugar in their body from all the sweet stuff that they eat and the cereal and jelly and this and that. And if they would only start with an ounce of Passion for Life every morning, you know, that would make a big difference in their lives. And matter of fact, Michelle Obama has taken on this this project, you know, to change young children's health and well-being by getting in a more nutritious state of mind.
That's right. That's right. No, that's fantastic. Wow. This is a beautiful thing. But the logistics of dealing with the problems that you guys face every day must be enormous. I can't imagine you know, dealing with, you know, the children with disabilities, trying to get them nutrition and trying to raise money and then trying to help the parents and all of these things. This is a phenomenal task that you're taking on. My congratulations to you.
Well, thank you so much. My wife and I sit behind the computers, you know, for 12, 14-hour days trying to figure it all out. We really should be out there, you know.
Well, you know, we work with children that really have fallen through the cracks. There are no government programs for them. There are no insurance programs. Many companies, you know, don't step up because it's just one family. And we just believe that if we don't do it, who will do it? You know, these children, through no fault of their own, have illnesses or handicaps or horrible life situations. And we just feel it's our calling to try and make life easier for them in any way possible, whatever that looks like. And for each family, as I mentioned before, it's different. You know, there are no two situations that we ever encounter where they need the same things. And so we just kind of roll with the punches, as they say, and, you know, work with the families as best we can and try and, you know, get people on board to help us and to see the vision of these, you know, precious little children, because they're our future. And, you know, we try and make a difference in their lives, one child at a time.
Well, it sounds to me like you're making a huge difference. Have you been able to partner up with any other organizations like the United Way or anything of that nature?
No, we haven't at this point. And something for down the road I'm hoping that, you know, we can do. It's just that we're struggling just to handle all the children we have, and so our time is so limited, because we are really out there in the field with them, you know, and we're also limited, you know, with funds, what we can do. So, you know, we rely on volunteers and you know, trying to work these things out. So we're hoping, you know, to get some companies on board with us that catch the vision of helping these children, and, you know, individuals who might want to support us. And you know, that's why we're so grateful, you know, to you for seeing the need and the urgency. And anyone who goes on our website can see who these children are. We have more than that because we keep getting new ones all the time, but there's quite a few on there right now, and you can read their stories and you know, see what happened to them, and it lists ways that you can help. And you know, so we're just grateful for anything and everything.
Wow, that's again, I thank you for mentioning that. But When you do raise the money for the kids, I imagine that they literally become your family. So I guess that you stick with them throughout their life, I would imagine, right?
Yes. That's one thing, because we always say the children, they may go, some of the children we work with are in foster care, and they may go out of the foster care system and back to their families. Many of them are not, but some are in the foster care. And we always say they may go out of that system, but they never go out of our system, because they're in our card number. And so, you know, once a child, you know, perhaps they have cancer or something, and they may recover, and they may not need our help, as, you know, in the same way as they did before. But we're very attached to them. They're very attached to us. We have them over to our homes as much as we can. We for Thanksgiving, we often have 30, 35 people here with the children and their families. And, yeah, they're very much a part of our family. And
well, Linda, you must be quite a cook. You're going to have to invite me over.
We just make triple of everything.
Yeah. I'd like for your listeners also to know, this is important, that we do not take a dollar out of salaries, out of any funds that we are receiving from people, so just so that they know that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, everything goes directly to the children. And in fact, we don't actually give the funds to the families themselves. What we do is we make sure that they're used in the best way possible. So, you know, if they need a bill paid, or if they need food, we purchase the food, and we make sure that it goes exactly where the child needs it. We're very, very strict with that, so that the needs are met in the best way possible for the families. And, you know, it takes the pressure off of them, and it allows us to go in and really, really focus on where the biggest needs are.
Wow, fantastic. You know, the president has when he came into the presidency, he had an open system, and I see you have pretty much the same thing. It's an open system. The money goes directly to the child's needs, and you're not collecting any money in itself, and that's fantastic. I'm sure that people, when they really, across this country, when they really get a hold of that information, that they're really going to be more charitable to your organization, I'm sure. Especially when my television show airs, we're going to make sure that your message gets out there, and we're going to do everything that you can, that we can, to help you guys out with that. Because American Green Portal is not just about green technology, but about quote unquote being green, and there's nothing more being green than helping our children. So I really appreciate you guys coming on the show today, and your message is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, there's no greater resource America has than its children, and you know, we just feel like, you know, in as much as you do it to the least of these, you've done it unto me, God tells us, and they just need someone to love them and someone to care.
That's right. Fantastic. Well, Charles, Linda, I appreciate you guys. You have no idea how much this meant to me for you guys to come on my show. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And we're going to do everything we can to help you guys out with that organization of yours.
Thank you very much.
We're so grateful to you as well. And the wonderful work you're doing is making a big difference as well. And we're happy to support that.
Oh, thank you very much. And hopefully I will see you guys. Will I see you guys in Orlando, Florida?
No, we won't be there, unfortunately, but who knows when our paths will cross next. It's always a nice surprise, right?
Well, you know, I'll be in California, so I'll be in the San Diego area before the year is out. So maybe I'll run into you there. I'll give you a call, and let's see what we can do to partner up a little bit.
Oh, definitely. You must come and see us and get together with us when you're here. We would love that.
Okay. Well, I will. I'm going to be probably seeing another friend of mine, Greg Reed, out there in San Diego. So I'm going to give you a call and stop on by. How about that?
That's perfect. We'll look forward to it.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right on back with Percival's Place.
Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. Today we have another special guest on the phone, and she is going to be talking about Long Island water and the contaminants and what we can do to have a healthier system. Adrian, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine. So tell us, where do you work, and exactly what do you do?
Well, I'm the executive director of Citizens Campaign for the Environment. We're a bi-state organization. We work in Connecticut and all throughout New York. And we work on a wide variety of environmental protection issues. Today, though, we're going to talk about an issue I think that's near and dear to everyone's heart, which is protection of our drinking water and our beaches and our bays.
Okay, so let's talk about the actual water in itself. I understand from some of the things that I was reading about your organization and what it does. Let's just talk about the first, let's just give people a background in terms of how do we have the drinking water. So can you give us a rundown in terms of the aquifers and how the rainwater sort of seeps down from the ground into the aquifers and all that kind of business?
I sure can. First off, I think it's really important that people know 100% of our drinking water comes from underground. We are classified by the United States Environmental Protection Agency as what's called a sole source aquifer, which simply means 100% of the drinking water comes from underground. And we don't get our drinking water from New York City. Sometimes people think that it doesn't come from underground, mysterious underground rivers from Connecticut. That sometimes people think that it really is. It's in layers of rocks rock formations and sand and gravel underneath Long Island. And that's the good news and the bad news, because the bad news is that everything we pour on the surface of Long Island can, and many times does, seep down into that drinking water source, mix with it, and unfortunately contaminates it. So it could be pesticides, it could be sewage discharge, volatile organic chemicals, you know, from industry, whatever it may be.
Oh my. So, okay. So basically the rocks in the sand are acting as a filtration system, correct?
Well, they act as a filtration system, but the problem is they don't filter out contaminants.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. So, you know, I was reading something about, you know, and I guess this is similar. I was reading about the spring water of from a particular, what island is that? I think that's Fiji. And Fiji has a system, something to that. But they're saying that it's filtered through rocks and that kind of thing. And it gives this kind of spring water type of a deal. So I guess that's the same thing with here. Unfortunately, as you're just saying that we're probably contaminating our water system through pesticides and lawn, you know, lawn care and all this kind of other stuff and what have you. So what can we do to prevent the those pesticides from seeping down into our water?
Well, we can actually do a lot of things. The first thing is we cannot use these pesticides. I mean, you know, for goodness sakes, we have to think about the fact that pesticides are all poisons. That's what classifies them as pesticides. They're designed to kill things. Insects, weeds, rodents, fungus, they kill. That's what happens. So the problem is that we put those toxics on our lawns and our gardens. It mixes with the rainwater or with the sprinkler system, and it seeps down, and then we end up drinking it. So if we wouldn't put it in our glass of iced tea, then why are we putting it on top of our drinking water supply? It's the same thing, metaphorically speaking. So
okay.
One thing is, you know, look, you might have to live with a couple more dandelions. But, you know, we like to say that dandelion hasn't killed anybody, but, you know, pesticides have adversely impacted us.
Right. Okay, so, well, I guess this is going back now to another subject that you must deal with, the law. I mean, if you can prove this to you know, our congressmen and our senators that, you know, what you're saying is absolute truth, then why haven't they taken the ball up and, you know, decided, well, you know what, we're going to outlaw this and we'll have to find another way to get rid of the dandelions and all that other stuff. I mean, why haven't they taken that up on a large scale?
It's a great question, and it's a very legitimate question that you're asking. And the problem is a number of things. Number one is the science is still, there's big gaps. So in other words, they know, for instance, that a drinking water standard for some of the most common pesticides on Long Island, for instance, might be 5 for such pesticides as, let's say, atrazine, which is a weed killer.
Okay.
So we're allowed to drink, believe it or not, up to 5 parts per million of atrazine. But, you know, you could actually have in your glass 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 pesticides in your glass of water, all of which are legally allowed to be there in very tiny, tiny quantities. But what we don't know is what is the interaction of all of these pesticides on our body. The science doesn't know. They have not looked at what is the overall impact of a multitude of chemicals interacting with our bodies at any given time or over a long period of time. And we like to say what we don't know can hurt us. So one answer, you know, to your question is that the science hasn't caught up with the problem yet.
I got you.
The second thing that's really a problem is all of these poison industries have lobbyists. So, for instance, the pesticide industry, the chemical industry, they all lobby. In the halls of Albany, in the halls of D.C., at your local legislature, and they are representing the corporate interest. They're not representing the public interest. So what groups like we do, Citizens Campaign for the Environment, is we'll be out there lobbying for public health, protection of clean, safe, you know, pure water, And that's a lobby battle that occurs.
Right. So you need.
I would like to say.
Right. you need some strong advocates to come along with you. In other words, these people are probably have been there a little longer. They've been able to dig in a little bit more deeper in the trenches, and they're able to influence the law a little bit in their favor, basically.
Not a little bit, a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can about it. Oh boy.
That's my problem is, actually this is my advantage is I'm an activist. I don't have to be diplomatic. I can tell people the exact truth as bad as it is. But industry and pesticide lobbyists, chemical lobbyists, they don't have a little bit of influence. They don't have a little bit of access. They don't have a little bit of power. They have a lot of all those three things. They have a lot of money, a lot of access, a lot of power, and a lot of influence. So it's not really a fair playing field, but if it wasn't for the different environmental groups or public interest groups, you know, up there really representing the public, it wouldn't be a battle at all. So, you know, it's it is what it is, but I have to tell you, you know, we use the power of the public's voice to battle against the corporate dollars. And that's what we do.
Okay. Well, as my diplomatic skills increase, I have to be as neutral as I can right now. But when I go on television, I think I'm going to have some people like yourself on, and let's see if they they'll want to do battle on television. So let's see.
I'm up for that battle.
I'm sure you are. So let's see. Here's a question for you. So what I was reading, and I want you to elaborate on this a little bit. The average person accumulates 6 pounds of household hazardous waste per year.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. How does one accumulate that kind of hazardous waste? What's going on?
Okay. What that simply means is that unfortunately, when we go to the grocery store and we walk down that cleaning aisle, we actually probably think all those chemicals and all those bottles and cans and spray jars have all been safe, but they're not safe. So we'll pick up some, you know, oven cleaner, we'll pick up some detergents, maybe you'll get some extra motor oil to put in your car because you're going to add oil yourself, or some antifreeze, or whatever it happens to be. Pesticides that you're going to use in the home, you use ant spray, and so all of these things accumulate at the bottom of the sink, as we know, right? You open up that cabinet, there's all those, this jewelry cleaner, whatever that happens to be.
Right.
And then there's a little bit left at the end of the can, and you want to throw it out. But you can't throw it out in your regular garbage, because that's not safe, because those really are toxic chemicals. And so what people need to do is stop throwing out those what's now termed household hazardous waste in the regular garbage, because we don't want it to go to an incinerator and we don't want it to go to a landfill somewhere. So what they need to do is each town has a collection system where they will take this material and dispose of it safely. So it will go to a hazardous waste facility and not be allowed to enter into the drinking water or into the air.
That's fantastic. Now, every town has that. So is there a scheduled time for it that every town does that on Long Island?
That's a great question, too. Each town is a little bit different. Some of the towns have permanent facilities like Huntington, where people could go, you know, any time of the day and just drop it off. Some of the towns don't have those permanent facilities, but they'll schedule days throughout the year. So each person just has to call their town and find out what their system or their process is. Because as out of the 13 towns we have on Long Island, it's a little bit different in each one.
Right, exactly. So, okay, so that's actually pretty good. The question then is, How does one, okay, so does the I guess it's different for every town, because I imagine you can probably put it out in maybe some towns, or some other towns you probably have to just go to the place and in itself and deliver this yourself.
Yes,
correct?
And just drop it off. That's right. That's right.
See, there it is. Okay. All right. So we'll have to figure out. So I have no idea what the town of Hempstead really does. I know I know it comes through all of the time. But, you know, in terms of telling the listeners exactly, I'll have to post that and get that and get those schedules up for everybody to view. That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. All right. So let's talk about some of these volatile organs, that the organic compounds contaminating the groundwater.
Okay, let's talk about it. But this is going to be like the Bad News Bears part of the program.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I tell you what, Adrian, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we'll leave that for the last half of the show. Okay?
That's fine.
Okay.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
Oh. Alrighty, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, okay, Adrian, so we're going to talk about the bad stuff that's going into the water. So, alright, so give it to us.
Okay, we're going to talk about volatile organic chemicals, and I just want to mention pharmaceutical drugs as well.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll get to that. I know, we're going to definitely talk about that. And, you know, I wanted to talk about how to properly dispose of that as well, because that's another point. You know, but talk about this one first.
Well, volatile organic chemicals really come from two sources. One is from industry that used to dump a lot before the laws were changed. And some of it, as you pointed out earlier, from those household hazardous waste chemicals that we use in the home. And then, unfortunately, sometimes we dump them down the sink, or we dump them in the backyard thinking we will just put them in the earth. The earth will magically cleanse them.
Right.
So there's two sources. One is us, the consumer. We're a big source of this volatile organic chemicals, and the other, unfortunately, is industry. And the reason that this is a really big problem is that your volatile organic chemicals have numerous health ailments associated with them. Everything from being carcinogenic, meaning causing cancer, or it could be a neurotoxin, which means nervous system disorder, reproductive disorder, immune system problems, everything, you name it. And these are, you know, some serious health effects. We really we don't want them in our water, obviously. You wouldn't be mixing them with your morning coffee. And so we really have to be judicious about keeping them out of the groundwater.
Exactly. So that brings me to this point. You know, these properties that are going in there, you know, you can detect methanol, you can detect benzene, you can detect chloride, all this kind of stuff that, you know, is bad for you, that causes cancer, that causes kidney failure, that causes, you know, diabetes, for goodness sake, and all these other things. And no one is really sounding the alarm except for guys like yourself. So it's amazing to me that, you know, we don't have some other things in place that really, you know, talk about this a little bit more, because who wants to come down with this is why we're dying so young. You know, with cancer and all these kind of other ailments that's going on. So it's amazing.
Well, you're exactly right. And the problem is we've become way too casual and way too accepting about having poisons show up in our drinking water and our air and our land. And unfortunately, we've kind of just accepted that to some degree in society, and we need to stop accepting it, because we have too many unexplained and unexplainable medical conditions, medical ailments, cancer clusters, and things going wrong. And I'm sorry, there is indisputable facts that association with chemical exposure and toxic exposure has adverse health effects on us as humans. And so we need to get back to the guiding principles of clean, safe, pure water is a goal and should be every person's right. That's our goal. That's our work.
That's exactly right. So here's my next question then. Here on Long Island, I don't know about the other states, but have you guys been able to, track where there are more contaminants than other places on Long Island?
Well, the answer is somewhat. There are a number of plumes, groundwater plumes, which means an area concentrated with toxics under the ground with volatile organic chemicals. But then you have all of the pesticides. There are literally thousands of wells on Long Island that have some level of pesticides in them.
Okay.
It's overwhelming. So that's why for us, and actually not only Citizens Campaign for the Environment, but other environmental groups have joined together now. And next month, I'm happy to say, we're launching a brand new island-wide campaign, the Long Island Clean Water Partnership. And we're going to working from one end of Long Island to the other, working on prevention of pollution, prevention of sewage from going into our drinking water, of pesticides and volatile organic chemicals and pharmaceutical drugs, because it's cheaper and safer and healthier to prevent the contamination than it is to continue to try to clean it up after the fact.
Well, you know what I'd like to do then is right before, what are the dates next month you're going to be doing that?
Well, when we're going to be launching a live website that will have all the information on it. There'll be radio and TV commercials starting next month. So, you know, it'll be holistically done throughout the month.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So you're going to do this throughout the month. That's fantastic. Oh, my congratulations on that.
Yeah, we're excited. And I think we really need a renewed effort on Long Island to get our state legislators, the Assembly and the Senate, and our county legislators and our county executives engaged in protecting drinking water. And we understand that, you know, they're very engaged in protecting and in kind of rebooting the economy. We get that. We live here, too. But we have to do two things at once. We have to reboot the economy and protect our environment and the public's health at the same time. Those goals should be, you know, Siamese twins, not separate ones.
That's right. Okay, so let's talk about the let's talk about this elephant in the room now. This pharmaceutical disposal. How do we go about that?
This is a really a brand new and emerging problem, actually.
I know it is.
Yeah, it's brand new science, but unfortunately, it's real. So, for instance, on Long Island, the United States Geological Service took about 70 samples of groundwater and found that 40% of those samples had one or more trace amount. This is very small amounts of pharmaceutical drugs, the most common ones being antibiotics and also anticonvulsants, followed very closely by codeine and then caffeine. So they are showing up in the water supply, surface waters as well. So we need to make sure when we have those unwanted and unused prescriptions left over in our homes or at the hospital or at the long-term care facility, that those are going to an incinerator. They are not flushing them. Please, for the public out there, please do not flush all those unwanted or unnecessary prescriptions that you no longer need. Because when you flush them, they go into the groundwater or they go into the bays. And either one is a bad option for us.
Exactly. Now, I happen to work in a medical facility at the moment, part-time. And, you know, that is a message that I think that people really need to know. And so, you know, I would recommend that we start hitting these health facilities, medical facilities, and giving them literature to hand out to these people as they're prescribing medication, that they can get one of these little, you know, note things and understand that, you know, if you finish with your medication, you know, and you don't need to take any more, don't throw it down the toilet.
Well, I have to say, you must be clairvoyant, because that is exactly one of the things that we are working to do right now. So that's going to be part of the campaign that gets launched in the next couple of months. We need everyone participating, right? Everyone has to be a steward of the earth. Everyone has to be steward of clean drinking water. I mean, we're talking about Long Island's very ability to be sustainable, to be lasting, to be healthy and safe, and a place that we're going to want to continue to live and bring up our children. And, and the best thing we can do, frankly, is have clean water, clean beaches, safe, healthy when people go swimming, clean water where we drink it, where we're healthy as well. This is a basic necessity that unfortunately has been ignored for far too long, and
right.
And we're not going to allow it to be ignored anymore.
Okay, so before I forget, can people contact your organization?
Of course. We have an office on Long Island here in Farmingdale. They can please go to our website at citizenscampaign.org, and we have a very extensive website on a multitude of issues. They can, you know, peruse it and hopefully learn a few things on it. And, you know, and our office is here in Farmingdale Village.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I have just one more question for you, and
okay.
then I'm gonna let you go. Let's talk about nitrates and why is that a now I happen to be a big guy for fish tanks, and so I know all about nitrates and all that kind of stuff. But for people who don't know, can you explain what nitrates are and nitrites and all that kind of business and what it means in terms of waste?
Exactly. Yes. On Long Island, this is we're really talking about just so you know nitrogen from sewage. So we have a potpourri of sewage treatment plants, many of which will discharge the treated waste back into groundwater, but many of which also put the treated waste in our bays, like the Bay Park sewage treatment plant in the town of Hempstead.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, all of this nitrogen that's still left over from sewage after being treated is now becoming a contaminant. It's polluting groundwater, it's causing excessive algal blooms, which can be very toxic on Long Island. Unfortunately, we have now four separate toxic algae blooms. One is red tide, which is so toxic it actually can cause paralysis or death, which is pretty darn serious.
Right.
The other is brown tide, which isn't toxic to humans, but it kills fish and shellfish.
Right.
We have a rust tide. We have a blue-green algae, which actually killed a dog that went into a lake out on the east end of Long Island that had this algae in it. And it was a very healthy dog, and it came out and died two hours later. So, we have some serious problems with the proliferation of the amount of nitrogen coming from sewage in our drinking water and in our coastal waters. And part of our campaign is to work with the state of New York and drive the permissible level of nitrogen down. The current standard is 10 parts per million. We need to get it down to 2 parts per million. And we need particularly our state senate and our assembly members to help us to get on the bandwagon, support the legislation that's going to that is actually done now, which will help drive that number down.
Fantastic. Well, Adrian, I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing it again.
Absolutely, and I'm going to invite you now onto my television program in the fall when we finish with the logistics. You're welcome to come on that show and do battle, okay?
That's what I live for. You let me know when.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Talk to you later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was this episode of Percival's Place. Come back next week, and we're sure to have some more exciting guests for you.